This is an extra scrolling. This is Avengers Endgame. And before we even say one word, the first word I need to say is the word spoilers. This is the full spoiler edition. If you have not seen Avengers Endgame, you should not be watching this right now. You have been warned. Everything from this moment forward is a spoiler for Avengers Endgame. So go watch Avengers Endgame first. I have assembled a team of Avengers, Avengers Assemble, and we are going to discuss this thing from top to bottom. Let's go in alphabetical order. Let's start with Rachel. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning. Hail Hydra.
Excellent. Adrian, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I just got to say, this ass is America's ass.
That's awesome.
Kyle, how are you?
Hey, man, make love, not war.
Chris Mao from the Blue Box Cafe, how's it going today?
Doing really well. I am inevitable.
Nice. That worked out really well. Everybody was supposed to find their favorite quote from this movie and to give it as the greeting for this. I, of course, am going to go with my favorite quote. Is that everyone? Were you expecting more? Here we are discussing Avengers Endgame. Let's start with the beginning. What is this movie all about? Rachel, tell me, what is Avengers Endgame?
It is the continuation of last year's Avengers Infinity War, where after the snapping, as it has been starting to be called on the internet, we see what happens to the rest of the heroes who have survived.
So in Infinity War, we saw half of the population of the universe disappear. That was Thanos' big idea, right?
Yes, and as they responded, half of every living creature on at least Earth has been snapped.
Mm-hmm. So they're gone, and now we're seeing the aftermath of that. It starts with 21 days later. No, actually, it doesn't. It starts with the end of the Infinity War, where Hawkeye's family actually disappears before his very eyes, right? Chris, were you sad? When Hawkeye
I did. But you know what? You obviously kind of knew what was going when you saw the daughter. It was the daughter, right? The daughter disappeared and you knew what was going to happen. So I just cried like it was the leftovers on HBO because that made me sad as well. So,
Kyle, how do you feel about Hawkeye?
After seeing the previews and knowing Ronan, his identity was going to come out, you knew his family was probably going to get wiped out. So it was interesting without even a lead in, just straight into a somber moment with the family, making hot dogs with mayonnaise, and I thought it finished. It started on the same tone that Infinity War ended on, in terms of just sadness, as the genocidal maniac took out all these fantastic humans.
Adrian, go ahead.
I was able to not see any previews for this thing, so I went in 100% blind, and I was bawling 2 minutes in. I knew it was going to happen, but it was still sad to see everybody go.
So did you intentionally avoid all previews and all teasers?
There was times, if I went to see Shazam, I didn't go into after the trailers were done because I did not want to see any Avengers trailers.
I am also of the no trailer perspective on movies that I know that I'm going to enjoy. I have seen the trailer for Star Wars Episode 9, but I don't plan on seeing any more of that.
What was interesting about the trailers is most of the footage from the trailers came from the first probably 20 minutes of the movie. And the breakdown of the film, right? The first portion where they fly into space and, you know, kill Thanos for the first time. Spoiler. the way the trailers make it, they make that seem like the crescendo of the film, but not so much.
Adrian, what do you think about the first 20 minutes of this movie?
Well, I'm part of the no trailer club as well. The only trailer I saw was the teaser where, you know, they kind of kept that one secret character, you know, Fat Thor, out of it, which was great. But the first 20 minutes, I mean, I was taken aback. I actually ended up seeing a spoiler on Facebook, and it it was really annoying. I knew that Hawkeye's family was going to die just because of this spoiler. But even with the spoiler, I sat there and my hands were covering my mouth. I was on the verge of tears. It was so bad. I didn't know what to do because that was such a detrimental moment into this story arc of not only Hawkeye, but Ronin.
Chris, how about you? First 20 minutes.
I loved it. And, you know, and I like that they're, you know, obviously with a 3-hour movie, you need to have some setup, and they did a great job, I think, of getting you back to where you needed to be emotionally. And then, you know, setting the table and throwing a few. So, you know, and like Rachel was, I was crying 2 minutes in. My wife's sitting next to me and she's crying. I'm crying. I think Alil and Rob were crying. So wow. We were all happy.
Kyle, what did you think of the first 20 minutes?
I was team all trailers. So just throw that out there. knowing that Hawkeye takes on the Ronin persona in the comic books and the trailers teased that he was in there, that was expected. I didn't expect them to jump into that right away before even the title comes on the screen. But they solved that mystery pretty quickly. What was fascinating too is during the promo for the movie, all of the interviews for Jeremy Renner were, are you taking on the persona or Ronin? And he and Ant-Man, played by Paul Rudd, the movie's going to start and the movie's going to end. Right? Like that was their entire go-to. Because it was pretty obvious. And so the only way you can avoid a Tom Holland, Mark Ruffalo spoiler is, yeah, the movie's going to start and it's going to end. So it hit hard, but it had to, I think, to kind of set up the rest of the film and what they wanted to do. So I appreciate the misdirection of, oh, hey, we went and killed Thanos. But just kidding, he destroyed the stones. So now you're back to plan wherever.
Hey, Chip Hessenflo has joined us. Good morning, Chip.
Good morning.
You didn't do the quote thing that I asked you to do, huh?
The quote thing?
Yeah, what's your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is the mom from Thor's mom, basically saying to eat a salad once in a while.
Welcome in.
That's where the humor comes in. The full of
community. Yeah, we missed most of that, Chip. I'm sure it was hilarious. Let's bring in, we have one more special guest, Stacey Shaw, who is our correspondent from England, isn't able to join us because she's going to the movie theater to go watch this movie a second time right now because there's a time difference between here and London. But she did send us this where she can tell us a little bit about her feelings on this movie.
So, Avengers Endgame. 11 years in the making, 21 films. The end of not just phase 3, but also the era of this Avengers lineup. I mean, on the whole, for me, it was pretty much near perfection. It got stronger as the film went on because there were some weaker scenes to start with. It did make for an interesting look at the different ways PTSD can affect a person, because obviously everyone who survived that snap has PTSD at this point. So you've got Thor with his overeating and refusing to say the name Thanos. You've got Clint's anger turning him almost into Ronin, but can we really call him completely Ronin at this point? I don't know. To Cap's desperation to just rebuild, to help, and to do what he's always done, really. I mean, those in themselves are pretty fascinating as it goes. But that will probably be a really long thing to talk about. Anyway, I spent most of the last hour in tears, I don't know about everybody else, because I was either crying with happiness or absolute sadness. Marvel's always been the one that knows how to hit its audience directly in the heart. Especially with that ending. I mean, my God! I haven't stopped thinking about that yet. I mean, it's what we all wanted for Cap, wasn't it? He deserves a happy ending. He deserves Peggy. But to actually let us see him in the past, finally having that dance, I was sobbing into the credits over that. I do feel bad for the person sat next to me. He must have thought I was nuts. But anyway, just about the film in general. Did anybody else notice that it felt very... It has quite a Guardians of the Galaxy vibe, which I've noticed more and more with the Marvel films since the first. But to be fair, that's not a bad thing. It's something that works, so why not go with it? Moving forward, I'm really hoping that Thor is going to stay with the Guardians. And I really, really, really need for him to take Korg and Mick there, because it just adds so much more humor to proceedings. I want to see them all hanging out with Drax because it'd be so funny. But yeah, basically, I absolutely loved Avengers Endgame, and all of my fears and nerves before seeing it were completely misfounded. And I can't wait to see it again.
What do you think? Do you agree with Stacey?
Mostly, I didn't like the Cap ending.
Why not?
He's basically, the movie screwed over Bucky a lot. Because the whole point of Civil War was to get back Bucky, and then they have Wakanda, and then Civil War happens, and then he's like, I'm going to give up Bucky. I'm just going to be with Peggy for the rest of my life, which, yay for Peggy. But it seemed like Bucky did not even know that was happening, so I was not happy with that.
Okay, so you are a Bucky fan. You've cosplayed as, what's Bucky's superhero
name? Winter Soldier.
The Winter Soldier. So you have a connection to Bucky. Anybody else have a worry about how Bucky is treated in this?
I think, so when he says, how can I, you're taking all the stupid with you, that's a callback to the first Avengers film, right? When Bucky leaves Cap. I think at that point in time, when he repeated that line, I think he was essentially alluding to the Winter Soldier, what he was about to do. I think it was a tip-off to what he was about to do.
Well, then at least Bruce did not know, because they were really confused when he went past them.
Adrian, what do you think?
I personally, I liked the Cap ending. I thought it was the perfect, I thought it was his perfect saying goodbye to everyone. The only thing that I personally was confused about was how Cap came back. Because with that time jump, there were technically two Captain Americas. Mm-hmm. There was the one in the ice, and then there was the one that went back in time. So I'm wondering, did the one in ice ever actually come out, or did he say, hey, let's not do this, I'm already here, just let it be?
So there is a time travel problem in this movie with Captain America. Was Captain America a part of the whole story, and then he traveled back in time, and then was he just living blissfully with Peggy and not helping out with any of these wars?
I was under the assumption that he went back to the 60s or the 70s, so that Cap would have already been in the ice.
I was under the impression he went back to the 40s.
He did. He went back to the 40s because that's where they were dancing. They were in the 40s.
And that's where the dance.
Not necessarily, Chip. They could have been dancing whenever. To the music, it didn't matter because that's the music they liked.
That is true.
But didn't he go back to wherever he needed to go back to fix the stones? So he had to go back and place the stones, all of them, back at the appropriate time.
Correct.
Isn't that correct?
Yes. So,
wasn't he in uniform?
No, he was just in clothing.
Oh, well, there you go. Then you're right. Who knows? The past happened. I think they addressed that earlier in the film, that the past would still happen, mm-hmm. and that when he went back to the past, basically that was a new universe type thing where everything just kind of starts off there.
Didn't they say that they had to put the stones back?
Yeah, they did.
I thought the stones back recreated this timeline and got everybody on the same page. That's why they had to put the stones exactly back. Isn't that what
the ancient one said?
The ancient one said. So, yeah. I mean, him going back, I mean, he might know that there'd be the problem if he saw himself. So he might have, told Peggy, we got to hide this from everybody and blah, blah, blah.
Wait,
so,
are we using the rules from Back to the Future?
Exactly. That was great, by the way. That was a great one.
Maybe he grew a goatee and then we wouldn't be able to recognize him.
That's right. Yeah. Keep on trucking.
Well, on the time travel front, I have a thought on Nebula. When that scene when Nebula, current Nebula, kills old Nebula, mm-hmm. wouldn't that effectively eliminate her character from the future because she killed herself version from 2014?
Say it again, Rachel.
Did she for sure die? Because she is mostly robot. I feel like they could have put her back together or fixed her.
That was my feeling, was she was damaged and she may not have survived for that moment, but she was not shot in the head, which is theoretically where her CPU is. So theoretically, they could have made another robot of her.
Right.
That was my feeling on that.
When
the second final snap happens, she's technically part of Thanos' army, which, you know, we don't really get told exactly who is being snapped. We just can infer that it's all of Thanos and his army.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't at that point that nebula be snapped as well?
That's an interesting thought.
Because Gamora is, right? Gamora is lost as a result of the second snap, right?
No, I think they get sent back, was my assumption under it.
I don't know. I don't know what.
I think the original Gamora was sacrificed and she's gone. But right. Since they traveled forward in time, you know, in as Guardians of the Galaxy, the Guardians of the Galaxy 3, you're going to see that dynamic between Quill and Gamora, who hasn't developed a relationship with him, but Quill, who has developed a relationship with Gamora. That's going to make for a really interesting dynamic in the third Galaxy Guardians movie.
Right.
When Gamora says, "This is the person I fall in love with," to Nebula, that was a pretty fun scene, by the way. That's the humor.
There's so much humor in the tree.
Which follows one of my favorite lines. It was either him or the tree.
I was never up there.
There were so many funny things that happened in this movie. This is a story that is rife with, as Stacy pointed out, PTSD. These people are suffering from the effects of this terrible thing that happened, but it's so full of good humor that breaks up that tragedy so well.
I agree that there was a lot of brooding early on. Very slow.
That first 20 minutes, I agree with you. That was such a slow 20 minutes trying to build up that feeling that these people are sad, that this is a terrible tragedy that's happened. I thought it was too slow, and I thought that it didn't really show us that same amount of pain that we would expect.
Well, the kid behind me that whispered to her dad, to his dad, excuse me, he's probably 8 or 10 years old, said, "Hey, is there going to be any action in this film?"
A little bit.
Maybe eventually.
And the kids in front of me that decided they were going to text each other through the whole film, that was enjoyable too. So they were on board with it being kind of slow at the beginning.
I think it was slow in the beginning. I don't know that everybody agrees with me on that, but I think that the beginning of that was slow.
I don't mind that it was slow at all. The idea of the decimation is half the people are gone, so I think that was the whole concept and the tone. They wanted to be morbid.
Would you have rather it been halfway in the middle have gone slow, or the beginning when it's still like, oh, we're still thinking about the last movie, and then we get into the action and everything?
It's too much. Go ahead, Chris.
There was a lot of excitement being built up to get there, and so... Was it really that slow, or was it the difference between what you expected and what you got? Because I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, was it slower? Yes, but I think they did a great job of getting you into the mood that you needed to be into, and then it's like they literally snapped their fingers and got into action. So
slow and steady wins the race, Steve.
There you go.
just ask the rabbit. He'll tell you.
The Asgardians, apparently rabbit. On Asgard, there's only one kind of rodent, and it's only a rabbit, because they say that same line. God. They call the raccoon a rabbit, and that's hilarious.
And yet, Thor knows how to speak root.
This was a masterful film in the sense of all the loose ends they wanted to address. They were absolutely able to address. I mean, they only had 3 hours to do it in, but I mean, they did a pretty good job.
So let's get to some of the main characters. We see a jump in time at the beginning there. They see the 21 days later, Tony Stark and Nebula are out in space, running out of food, running out of oxygen. He's recording his thoughts in the camera of the Iron Man mask, hoping that somebody will see this afterwards. How did you feel about Tony Stark and Nebula in space, Adrian?
I thought it was definitely interesting, especially seeing a more human side, per se, of Nebula. You know, her and Tony playing football and everything with the little paper and everything. That was cool. I liked that. I thought that was a cute little thing that they added in there. But it really showed how Stark is actually one of the smartest, if not the smartest person on the planet. He's able to reverse fusion cells. He's able to make sure that the oxygen can last just a little bit longer. But you could definitely see the progression of time in him, not having enough food to survive, not having enough water or oxygen, and just seeing his body just start to shrivel up. And I thought that was probably one of the most interesting and just plot-twisting parts of the movie. And it was just in the beginning.
I immediately determined I need to work out more because I need a body like Tony Stark.
As opposed to the body of Thor, is that what you're trying to say?
Well, opposed to any of them.
Yeah.
They're all like super fed. I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah, it was significant. I noticed it very quickly that Robert Downey Jr. was significantly skinny in the beginning of that movie. He put on that character, and we noticed.
That was CGI, man. There's no way he went that skinny for the movie. That was too. That was like Machinist.
I was about to say he pulled Christian Bale from Machinist.
Yeah, I don't think that looked CGI to me. Maybe it wasn't, but I mean, he obviously acted his body that way. It was pretty good, I thought, and I think that's why. Was it Richard Roper that said he deserved the Oscar, or
yeah,
Dean? So yeah, I mean, he did. He was amazing in this movie. And the range he had to take was incredible.
The culmination of that Iron Man character, that 11 years from the beginning of the MCU, which was Robert Downey Jr., really sparked this whole conversation. He absolutely was the best actor on screen for this movie.
I'm going to jump real quick and just say that that guy from Swingers at the end of the movie where he's talking to the kid, and he says, hey, what do you want? And she said, a cheeseburger. I don't know if that was an ad lib line.
That guy from Swingers.
John Favreau. One of the best.
The Replacements, right?
The director of The Mandalorian, along with lots of other wonderful pieces. That guy from Swingers from 30 years ago. Thanks, Chip.
You know that executive producer, Kevin, what's his name? The Greek guy, what's his name?
Hulk?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think that Robert Downey Jr. did a fantastic job acting here. I think that Scarlett Johansson did a fantastic job really emoting and giving us the I'm really sad making a sandwich alone in Avengers Tower. I think that she did a great job too.
Let alone a peanut butter on white bread sandwich.
Hey, that was my middle school.
That's like, I just gave up. So
yeah,
that's
exactly what Ant-Man wanted, though. Think about it.
Hey,
that was my middle school lunch growing up. I had that every single day. So
it promotes good health in America, right? Some white bread and some peanut butter. She was sad.
Yeah,
that's a sad sandwich.
I personally wasn't huge on Iron Man throughout the entire, like, MC saga.
Really?
He was never my favorite hero. Not in the comic books, not in any, like, the graphic novels that they've had or anything. But this one definitely peaked out of all of the Iron Man showings for me. It was probably the best. I don't think he was the best actor. I think he was one of the best. I think without him, the movie wouldn't have been what it was. I personally thought that Chris Evans was between Chris Evans and name is blanking on me.
Name that character.
John Cheadle. Even though he had such a minor role, his role really showed who, or the friendship, not only between Iron Man and War Machine, but throughout the entire Avengers, it showed that they are truly a family and they do stick together.
Anybody else have a favorite actor in this? Did you enjoy Tony and Pepper and their love and how they have a five-year-old daughter that happens to pop up? Was anybody surprised by the idea of a younger Stark?
I thought they were going to adopt. I didn't know if they were going to have a kid.
I was surprised that she was five because it was immediately 5 years later.
Well, he did. He did two things he alluded to in previous films, and that's one, he talked about buying like a farmhouse like Clint out mm-hmm. for Pepper. So he did that. And then at the start of Infinity War, when he was talking to Pepper about what to name his daughter, he named his daughter exactly what he was talking about, like, yo, your crazy uncle or cousin or whatever it was. So he did what he said he was going to do.
That's right.
What? He lives on a farm with a Jarvis there? I mean, come on. What kind of, you know? It doesn't really matter. He can go wherever he wants. So living in a farm doesn't really impact him that much, in my opinion. Although it's nice and it's pretty and it's a place to relax, it's still him doing what he was doing.
He's got the
regardless
whole,
of where it is.
He's got the whole holographic table and he's doing all the stuff. And he's got Friday or Jarvis or whomever the AI is at the time. And isn't raising a kid on a farm better than raising a kid in the city?
When aliens are attacking, yes.
If Jarvis showed up, I would have cried.
That, yeah, that would have been great, but yeah.
Well, I think one of the coolest parts of Tony Stark's story was when he got a chance to interact with his dad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
See, I think the payoff of Tony Stark was meeting his dad. That was fantastic. Yep. And that was just the way he acted. I thought in that scene alone was unbelievable because, you know, he's always been the one on top, and then he meets his dad and all of a sudden he's the second smartest guy in the room, pretty much obviously. And you're like, wow. I thought that was a very powerful scene.
And the other films pointed to how he didn't necessarily have the best relationship with his dad growing up, right? And so for him to change his perspective and see how just genuinely excited his dad was to bring him into the world, I think it was just it was a good way to loop that story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also a dream sequence in the sense of imagine going back and talking to your father at, you know, his strongest year, and you are potentially the older person to that. I mean, he was the adult talking to his father, who was younger than he is, mm-hmm. with even more experience and knowledge, and, you know, he's sort of trying to give advice without giving advice. I mean, it's certainly a dream short story type of story to kind of tell, and they did it in a very short time in a movie.
And as we've talked about many times, that is what time travel can do. When you actually time travel, that's where you can have those interactions with those people that you've lost. And that is, for me, the basis of why I love time travel so much. The idea of we've lost somebody, we can go and recover at least a moment with that person. And that's really what Tony gets to do here. And yes, Jarvis is there driving the car, a grayer, older Jarvis from the Agent Carter series, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's where it was from, yes.
Yeah. I enjoyed that Agent Carter series so much. I really wish that Marvel was able to put together more of those sorts of shows where we can link back to these movies that we love and look forward to the movies that are coming up. I wish that Disney had some sort of streaming service that they could do that with.
That is amazing, isn't it?
Transition!
A person can dream, Steve.
The Disney streaming service is going to be, for me, that machine that I get more Star Wars and more Avengers and more of those characters and more of those stories.
Who's getting it, like, right when it comes out?
America?
I'm saying of this room.
$7 a month is not much.
So, no.
Yeah, I don't have any plans to do that.
Wait. No? Why not?
No. Well, I already have a couple things that I'm paying every month. You know, I have to pay for like Crunchyroll. My buddies got me into that.
Okay.
Pay for Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime. I can't rack on another monthly bill for that.
And that's something that we've discussed on Too Much Scrolling often, is the idea of one more $6.99 on the list is expensive. It gets up to that cable TV price really quick. I'm going to have to probably get rid of BritBox, which is my Doctor Who access, so that I can get onto this Disney access.
Well, I think we're going to become more comfortable with, you know, signing up for a service for a month or two, dropping that service for another one, and just kind of going through it that way. The idea of signing up for 10 services may just be overwhelming, but to always have, you know, one or two going on at the same time, knowing that you're going to cancel Stars when American Gods ends because you're picking up Hulu because the next season of Castle Rock comes, mm-hmm. you know, that may become more the norm.
Living that free trial and new email life, huh?
That's what I'm doing with the DC one.
Well, kind of getting through. I mean, they may not do free trials anymore. They may just say it is, you know, it's $7 or whatever it is. Or maybe they'll start stretching it out, like, well, you get the first month with it, the second month, but the finale is that third month. You know, that type of thing.
That's certainly possible.
And they're gonna get smart on when they drop stuff, because the people are just signing up to pick up do them at the end of the month. So you have to buy 2 months. If I was in charge, that's what I would do. It's like, oh, it's coming out the 28th of April. Now you can't watch all the shows. You have to pay April and May to get it if that's what you want to do. Because I know people who do that already. It's going to happen. I mean, and there's going to be a casualty out of this of something, whether it's CBS, whether it's Netflix or Hulu. Somebody's going to end up losing because they're already just barely hanging on as it is, trying to get shares, and then Disney Channel is gonna take a chunk of it.
Well, I think Hulu just dropped their pricing for their advertising version of that. Well, with advertising, and you know, Disney also bought another big stake in it. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them don't just start getting folded into the other ones. And if you think about Hulu, Disney Plus, and ESPN, you can easily see that they're starting to create this, you know, pseudo cable package anyway. It doesn't take that much to kind of flip it on and make it kind of all work. You get all this available to you. So,
all right, let's get back to Avengers Endgame. Tell me about Thor. What was your feelings about Thor, Rachel?
So is Thor's mom now alive?
That was the day that she died, was the day that he traveled back to.
No, she definitely died, I think, in the same sequence she did. Because he was about to tell her about it, and she was like, nah, you're here to affect your future, not mine. So she wasn't interested in him giving the information that the Dark Elves are coming.
I was just like, did he take her away from Jane for too long that stopped the timeline from happening?
No, I don't think so. I don't believe so.
That was my one plot hole that I was concerned about.
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
But it's almost like she knew what was happening, so I don't think it would have affected it. It's like, you know, she was prescient enough to know it is part of the deal, because she said she saw through different lenses or what it was. I can't remember the line, but
because she's a witch, she could see through a different perspective and see things that are not necessarily seeable for regular humans.
Or as guardians,
sure.
And what's interesting about it too is she had very minor roles in the other two films she was in. I think I read she only had 14 total lines in those two films, and she had 28 lines in this one. So wow. Rene Russo's character took a step up in terms of prominence in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Is that because they couldn't afford Anthony Hopkins? So,
perhaps. Well, it's about emotion. It's about loss and finding. And I don't think Thor is all that broken up about the loss of his father at this point. It's all about mom. Mm-hmm.
I didn't love the Thor portrayal. I think they could have done the PTSD route without making him look like the Big Lebowski. I get that's for laughs, but I think you could have got like a sad downtrodden Thor and had Korg and playing Fortnite and done all of those things, but I don't know. It was almost laughable trying to watch him fight 85 pounds overweight at the end of the movie. I just that lost it for me, but that's probably just personal preference, and I think that's subjective.
I gotta tell you, my 13-year-old commented that there wasn't enough Fortnite in this movie.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Brilliant yeah. marketing on their part to work across platforms like that, though. Holy moly.
There was a little continuity error with that, though. My buddies and I, when we saw this, after the movie, we discussed it. When you see that scene where Korg's playing Fortnite, and he's saying, this kid's talking smack about me again and whatever, and Thor gets on and he threatens to fly over, tear his arms off and everything. It kind of makes it seem like he's talking to an enemy and not an ally, because, you don't really trash talk your teammates. That's the only continuity error in that entire Fortnite scene.
That's the problem you have with this, Adrian.
That's the only problem with the movie. That's fine.
You can't talk to people you play against, like in Call of Duty. It's only your teammates in Fortnite and all those things.
You can still grief them, though. I mean, people...
You can grief them, but you can't talk to them. That was the only error in that entire Thor scene that we had an issue with. I thought the fat Thor was great. I was totally expecting for him when he calls his hammer and he calls his axe to just instantly slim down in his armor. I thought that was so cool. But I was fine seeing him walk around, having the earth shake with every step. That was great. I loved Fat Thor.
Well, I like the big rock guy, the sass guy with it. He's the Joker. He's the guy from New Zealand. He's like, hey, man, hey. I love his accent. I love how he kind of comments.
Hey, new Doug.
new Doug. Is it Tiki who's playing him, or is it the guy from? Is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was Tiki from who was the director of Thor Ragnarok, who was the character Korg in that movie. Yeah. Yeah,
Korg is great.
Oh, I'm ready for a movie with Korg. Yeah, man, I want to have a movie.
Yeah, the Russos confirmed after Infinity War that Valkyrie, Korg, and whatever the other character's name was, that they escaped that before Thanos' ship showed up and detonated it.
All right, so should we talk about New Asgard, this whole fishing village that was established in Norway by Thor, with Valkyrie really doing the work, and then at the end, he bestows the leadership quality onto Valkyrie?
You mean with the sign that says no admittance? Yeah, that was great.
Because I thought he's flying off with the Guardians of the Galaxy. We're going to get a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, the Asgardians of the Galaxy, and Valkyrie's going to be in charge of this new Asgard.
It's going to be great.
I think it sets up a nice... I mean, think about Wakanda means to the Black Panther country. Well, now we've got this, a new Asgard area that we've got a new country that can be built upon. And they're basically building from rubble. There's not really a lot left.
I'm excited for Asgardians of the Galaxy. Going back to the comic books, that going out and they reintroduced that leadership dynamic between Quill and Thor. There was a good minute-long awkward scene where he's like, yeah, you're in charge, Quill. No, you're not. And the Gamora-Quill, reacquainting with one another situation. It's just going to be interesting to see what that mission is in the third Guardians film and who are the new villains and who are they interacting with. I think that it'll be probably a really good segue film into what the next big challenge is going to be for the Marvel Universe.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does Chris Hemsworth still have the movie in his contract? I thought it was done.
I honestly, I don't know the answer to that, Rachel, but that we are certainly being set up for the next Guardians of the Galaxy with Chris Hemsworth as Thor.
Okay, because I was assuming they were just going to drop him off somewhere and that was going to be the end of him for that movie. Because I thought all the originals finished their contracts on this one.
I've heard that there will be another Thor film down the pipe eventually, and another Guardians film. Those are the two I know of.
I knew Guardians. I did not know Thor.
That's speculated in like 2021 to 2023.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly this could go in many directions, but this could be a wonderful opportunity to start rolling in the Fox properties in. You know, imagine if the new threat is something like Galactus, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden, even at the end, I mean, maybe it becomes a teaser where there's a force coming and it's coming towards Earth to destroy Earth.
Again.
And that may be an easy way to start folding in some of those characters.
The Fantastic Four, the X-Men, Deadpool could certainly be in on some of those now that we've put the family back together and Fox and Disney are one company.
Yep. I hope they redo Doctor Doom and make him actually sinister and worthy of what he actually is.
Agreed.
Before it was just garbage.
I agree that that is one character that could be a real menace to the universe, and he has not been portrayed well in any of the movies so far. So let's talk about who's not in this movie. We don't have Lewis from Ant-Man, the Michael Pena character, is not in this movie at all.
I forgot about that. Okay.
I was kind of surprised.
Maybe he was worried about with that.
That's an extended movie, the 4.5-hour Blu-ray release, Steve.
Where he's just sitting around and watching all this happen from afar.
He's running security somewhere.
Screen him on there and put it on there. Yeah.
He, T.I., and the guy who talks about the Russian legend the whole time, they're just hanging out somewhere doing security work.
Did he make it or not?
What?
Did he get snapped? Did he get dusted or not?
I don't know.
I mean, it could have been a viable
thing. The said he didn't.
Oh, did he? Okay. I was about to say, the only people they show you from the Ant-Man side that survived or didn't survive were the main four. They don't show you anyone else.
When the third one came out, they did like an interview and they had a list of people who were curious on if they got snapped, and he was on the list of he did not.
Hmm. So it's kind of curious that he was left out of this movie where we have so many characters and all of them get equal time. We miss out on that one comic voice from the Ant-Man series.
Well, if he did in fact get wiped out and we have the re-entry scene where everybody that did get wiped out comes to the battle, he's not really the battle type.
Right.
So that's probably why he didn't show up.
Yeah, you think Doctor Strange is going to pick him up in his red coat or whatever he was?
How about Howard the Duck? Why haven't we seen more Howard the Duck in the series after that one tease of Howard the Duck in the Collector's realm?
He did survive the snap. The directors did say he survived the snap. So
is the world ready?
Did George Lucas survive the snap? That's what I want to know.
Is the world ready for a Howard the Duck reboot?
I think he's got a Howard the Duck movie in him. He wants to bring it out, Steve.
What do you think, Adrian?
I honestly don't think so.
No?
The only reason I don't think the world's ready for a Howard the Duck movie is because none of, like, today's generation, you know, knows who Howard the Duck is.
Okay, that's a good reason to reboot. Go on.
It's a good reason to reboot for people who know, but like anyone who doesn't know exactly who Howard the Duck is, you know, he's such a cool hero and everything. He's got such a cool story, but everyone's going to be confused, like, why the hell is a duck on like the main character of a movie?
Here's my theory. If Detective Pikachu does well in 2 weeks, we're going to see a Howard the Duck, because it's essentially the same story.
Yeah, but you're talking Ryan Reynolds as the catalyst for Pikachu. And, I mean, he's worth a bunch of tickets sold.
I agree. So who do we need to cast as the voice of Howard the Duck? Please say Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, yeah. Affleck will have no problems with that at all.
I'm investigating who voiced him in that teaser at the end credit scene. Hold on.
I don't know the answer to that, Kyle, so I am curious to see what your Google search comes up with.
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti? Is that who it was?
I'm saying that's who it should be.
That's who. I would go with that. Louis C.K.'s out, right? We can't have Louis C.K. for a while.
Oh, yeah.
He's still in the penalty box for a while.
Who
Depends on what the movie is.
Who is the comedian that used to come on the Comedy Channel? He had like a late night comedy show. It was his bits. But
Jim Jeffries?
No, it was kind of a bald guy, maybe.
Louis Black.
Not Louis Black.
Is it Louis Black you're talking about?
David.
Attell. David Attell.
David Attell.
David Attell.
That's what I'm thinking.
That would be an interesting choice.
Yeah, that's a little politically incorrect, but that's okay.
Okay. How about? I'm doing the chip thing, and I don't know the names of people.
Louis Black would be a good Howard the Duck, by the way.
I agree with you. I think that would be. How about Mark Maron? How about Mark Maron?
Mark Maron would be hilarious. I like Mark Maron.
I think that would work out pretty well.
Do we know who voiced him in Guardians or no?
Seth Green voiced him in 2, and then Chip Zine voiced him in the after credits in the Collectors.
Okay, so that's nobody, but I don't think a Seth Green is the right choice. I'm trying to imagine.
You gotta have sort of a sarcastic, gruffy type of guy. Yeah, John Madden. I mean, that's what I'm thinking.
John Madden. Mikhail Gorbachev. How about
obscure 80s references for 2000, please?
John Madden. How about a Seth MacFarlane instead of a Seth Green? Could a Seth MacFarlane pull off a full starring role that he's not writing? Or could he write it?
I think maybe Mo from The Tavern and The Simpsons.
Well,
he can do it.
Here's why I say Seth MacFarlane. He is a Fox guy, and Fox is now Disney.
Sure.
If they make it a Disney Plus movie or something, I could see Seth MacFarlane doing it.
I'm behind the Howard the Duck effort fully. Let's make this happen.
Hey, is the Orville coming back? If it's not, then he can do it. I don't know how much time he has.
It has not been greenlit yet for a third season, but I really have high expectations. I am loving every minute of the Orville.
Yeah, the second season is way better than the first. I love the first, so.
It's some of the best sci-fi on TV, and it's definitely the best Star Trek on TV. All right, who else do we need to talk about? Gwyneth Paltrow. Tell me about what you think about Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts in this movie.
I like her character as Pepper Potts. I think she is... she can be polarizing in some of her other fun stuff, but she really kind of gravitates, and she plays off of Robert Downey Jr. incredibly well. This is a good part for her.
Kyle, what do you think?
I think it was good to see the story arc continue with her playing Rescue in an official role, not just a Save Tony role, right? Like a larger, along with all the other female characters in that universe. So.
Yes, let's get to that scene. Rachel, what do you think about that scene where all the women of the Avengers universe are all on camera together and they are absolutely doing it?
Yay, girl power! But Captain Marvel's supposed to be so super powered. I was like, why does she need them? But I was like, yes, show me all the fighting. Show me all the girls fighting.
Adrian, you're shaking your head. What are you thinking?
Okay. My only issue with that whole scene, it kind of showed Peter in like a baby state, like he can't do anything. And when, you know, Captain Marvel came in, you know, he's like, I don't remember the exact line, but he basically asks, how are you going to do this? And they come out. I think the line would have been fine if it's, she's not alone, and then everyone comes out. She's not alone, she has us. It just seemed too political. It took such a big political stance in such a beautiful scene that just took away that entire fight for me. I lost everything after that. All interest, I couldn't look at the screen. It actually took me away from the movie. for that.
Are we thinking of two different scenes here? Like two different parts?
We're talking about the scene where
Peter Parker... about when all the girls, right? Or are you talking about Peter Parker giving the thing to
Peter Parker?
The intro into it.
Peter Parker says, "How are you going to get across the field?" And then the line that follows is, "She's got backup, and all the girls are there, and they're going to make this happen."
Mm-hmm. I'd like to point out there are women too; they're not just girls.
I have a fundamental, all right, and so this might cause some pain and agony amongst the group, but I really struggle with the male rejection of female superhero characters. A lot of the backlash from Captain Marvel that came from her own film, just a bunch of guys being angry that female characters are, and there's some female empowerment to this, right? And I understand most primary male superheroes, right? Like, they dominate the universe. They dominate the Marvel universe, right? The main three that fight Thanos are all males. But I really struggle with people thinking it's a political stance to be like girl power with superheroes when they weren't really prominent in most of the films. So it rubs a little for me.
So you enjoyed that scene? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's great. I didn't think it was some kind of political thing. At the end of the day, when they all are set up and Hope's in the front, I think that's fantastic, right? I think it's going to usher in this era of more female superhero leads instead of being the second fiddle to the male superheroes. And I don't think it's some kind of political agenda driving that. It's just, it's opening the world to more female comic book superhero fans. And so it's going to align with that.
So I have like the opposite issue with like Captain Marvel. I was one of those people that did not like Captain Marvel because I thought it was really political on we can make a girl movie. And this scene, I was like, yes, that's fine. That's how you do the girl fight. Just move on. Just have them all fight.
It's 2019. Yeah, but
on the grand scheme of things, these are Disney properties. And they are properties. We have to recognize they're properties. And their goal is to expand the use of their property. So this, I don't necessarily, I mean, I understand why someone could say, hey, it's a political thing, or hey, this is to take me on the movie. But the reality is there's a whole group of, Disney bought Marvel to be able to reach young boys. But you know what? They can reach young girls with these properties too. And they just have to have the vessel to do it. And this is the type of vehicle that allows them to do it. Disney's getting ready to open up another park. I don't know when they're doing it, the next 5 or 6 years. It would not surprise me if it's not a Marvel-themed park, and they're going to need characters that appeal to boys and girls.
So the Marvel one comes out this year, and the two Star Wars ones open in May and June.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm excited for Star Wars Land. I am much more a Star Wars fan than I am for the MCU, and I'm ready to hand Disney more of my money.
Dude, and I sell your son because it's going to cost that much.
It's going to be ridiculous. I am ready to get, okay, lawn mowing businesses are going to go up in the city because my boys are going to be hired out so that we can capture some cash to go and spend it at Disneyland. Oh. That it's happening.
Don't go till like July.
Well, you heard what they're doing in that, to get off segues. Mm-hmm. You get like 4 hours in the park. That's it. If you're able to make a reservation, that's all. In your trip, 4 hours. I'm waiting as much as whenever it opens. So
it's a part-time job, just waiting in line.
Oh yeah, with no
money doing it.
You know what?
I'm ready.
Captain Marvel thing.
I think.
Can I interject? I'm sorry to go back to the Captain Marvel thing before it gets too stale. She is by far the most powerful of the MCU mm-hmm. heroes. And it's very evident in this movie. And I thought it was fantastic because literally she's the only one who almost took on Thanos one-on-one without, you know, almost. She didn't quite do it because obviously Thanos had the power of the six stones. But to say anything else other than, you know, I think it could be male, female, whatever, but she just happens to be that. And I think that's fantastic that, you know, especially little girls have somebody to look up to and saying,
we are the most powerful, and that's great. And they because of the way women have been treated for so long, we need to make that a priority in what we do going forward, you know, and the people that can do that, I think. And I think it was great that she was that.
Well, see, I have no problem with Captain Marvel or anything. I had no problem with any of the women, actually, in, like, the Marvel Universe. I think the portrayal of all of them is almost perfect. Going back to the Captain Marvel movie, I was not a fan of it at all. I thought that, you know, the storyline was drawn out. I thought that they could have actually gone back to the original Captain Marvel, giving Claire the powers and everything. I thought that would have been a better story, but my only issue, like I said, is just how they portrayed the women, like that women's fight. I can't. It stemmed from the Peter Parker scene, and you know, I loved watching all the fighting. I loved watching Captain Marvel, you know, beat Thanos up for a good 30 seconds and then just get blasted with a stone. That was, you know, it happens, and like that was cool. But you know, the only person that I actually had an issue with the entire movie was Pepper Potts. I hate Gwyneth Paltrow. I never liked her in any of the Iron Man. I thought that she was probably the bane of the Iron Man saga. And then without her, I would have loved the movies. But with her in them, it took away everything.
So you would have been better off if it was Laura Dern.
I would have been better off without having Pepper Potts at all.
Chip has the same problem with Laura Dern that you have with Gwyneth Paltrow. Let's put Laura Dern in it. She'll act.
She'll make it better.
Oh God!
I think that scene was wonderful. I think that all those characters are wonderful. Black Panther's sister Shuri doesn't get one line in this movie, but she's there with a powerful weapon of some sort on her arm, and she's gonna go kick some butt. I love it.
She's got a lot of pew pews going. That's all. You heard her gun going up. Pew pew.
What, Chip?
You could tell. I mean, you could write novels about it. I mean, my goodness, there's plenty of other stories that could come from this that we're not privy to. And that's what I was saying, is that if they wanted to explore those to find out, you know, what Doctor Strange and Spider-Man did when they were disintegrated, or what some of these female characters were doing when they were disintegrated and came back, there's plenty of opportunities to tell those stories. Anyway, I have no problem with how they portrayed any of those characters. I did mention earlier that Gwyneth Paltrow can be kind of a polarizing figure because of her personal life, but I think she worked fine in this, and if they want to pick a different actress, so be it. I think they've done such a great job at finding quality actors from the past who can be part of this, and young actors who want to be part of this, and it allows these actors who do a little bit of this to jump off and have a name when they go do maybe projects that they have greater passion for. So it's a good soapbox to kind of get involved in I guess in Hollywood, and then move on to other stuff.
The next topic I want to talk about is this a children's film? Should we be bringing young people to this movie? Comic books tend to be a children's medium. Is this movie a children's movie?
Only if they've seen everything else.
Comic books are not a children's medium. Comic books are a medium where they can reach children. Mm-hmm. The Marvel books typically a long time ago were aimed at young people, but they've slowly grown into where they were aimed at adults. And then when Marvel purchased them, they've reaffirmed that they're going to bring some of these characters, I mean, back to being young people characters. There's no reason to tell an old man's story through a young person character unless, you know, maybe it's a one-off.
Chris, what's your
that for a dominant statement?
No, I don't think this movie is for little kids, but I think you need, if you have been watching all of the movies, I think you can get into it, but there's a lot of adult themes in this movie in particular, just like Harry Potter. By the time you get to, you know, the end two movies, that was not for kids at all, and I don't think this is for kids. There's a lot of death, there's a lot of gratuitous violence in this, and it's not for a 7-year-old. But if you were 10 or 12, maybe, because you can handle that. But there, I saw little kids just like, there were like 5-year-olds at our screening, and they had no business. I hate to say no business being there, but that's too young, for I thought.
I agree.
Adrian, what do you think?
I don't think this is a kids' movie. I was very lucky with my screening. I saw it with zero kids in the theater. There were none at the 7 o'clock showing that I went to, and it just had a lot of humor that, you know, was meant for adults. It had a lot of humor that was meant for like the teenage generation. Nothing for kids though. And you know, as much as I loved the Marvel universe when I was a kid, I could never see myself bringing like my 5-year-old cousin to come see this. As much as he wants to see it, because I know he does, he's been asking me if I would take him, because I'm going to see it like 2 or 3 more times. I know I miss little things. But I told him, I after I saw it, I said, I can't take you to see this. You can talk to your mom and dad, but I'm not going to be the one to sit through 3 hours of him whispering and, you know, asking me what's happening or who that character is. And that's my only issue is, you know, everyone in the theater was quiet. You know, we had moments where the entire theater is clapping at the same time, cheering at the same time. Like, you're supposed to be quiet, but we're all screaming and yelling because of how awful the scene was. Oh, yeah. And that, you know, kids don't understand that. That's where my quarrel is.
Here's my thing. My theater was totally silent. We did gasp every once in a while. There was no clapping. There was no cheering. There was very little laughing other than me, of course, because I laugh at everything. But my theater was very concentrated and looking at the screen with wide eyes and trying to figure this stuff out. There were no kids in my theater either. There were no kids in my theater either, but we were very quiet. It was I didn't know how to react in this room.
Wait, your room didn't erupt when T'Challa showed up.
Say it again, Chris.
I was saying. Go ahead.
Okay, Chip.
Clapping. We had it all going on in our theater.
Okay. Chris, what were you saying?
I was just gonna say, like at the end when T'Challa showed up. The our theater went crazy. I mean, like insane. I mean, and then everybody started popping in, and I mean, and there were a couple other times when that happened too. But that was like, I think the biggest, you know. And it was funny. I was talking with some of the people that I went to the movie with, and I only remember that happening a couple of times. It happened when the Star Wars started, but people were just excited. But I remember watching The Matrix, and people went nuts in that movie, and I can't remember the other one we talked about, but it was, everybody was crazy when that happened in ours. I don't know about you guys.
Rachel,
even at the end of the movie, people were clapping at the end of the movie. So, you know, during the middle of the movie when the battles are going on, it's like that, people are whooping and hollering and clapping, but at the end people were clapping. I mean, it was almost a standing ovation, not quite, but it was there.
Rachel, what was your experience?
So have you seen like those like Comic-Con like trailers where they like, or videos where they reveal a trailer and the audience goes crazy?
I was just in one of those 2 weeks ago at Star Wars Celebration where we saw the Star Wars.
That was my theater.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was in the wrong theater.
We got it for Stan Lee. We got it for Hail Hydra. We got it for them showing up. Oh my God.
Hail Hydra was another one.
Nuts. Yeah.
Wow. How about you, Kyle? What was your theater like?
It was pretty loud and rambunctious, not quite to Rachel's level, but
I went to the wrong theater.
Yeah, right. But to give another data point on the children's side, I'll quote the late great famous Mitch Hedberg and say, "Every book is a children's book that the kid can read." I don't know what that means for us, but you know, take it for what it is.
The Tao of Mitch. I love there's a Mitch Hedberg quote for everything. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I probably misspoke when I said that this is usually a children's medium, but it at the beginning, it certainly was meant for those reluctant readers, and I still use comic books to this day for my reluctant readers. It's a good way to get into the concept of narrative in a very simple, you know, one sentence at a time kind of package.
Sure. Yeah, but you even said in your show notes that we were talking about that this book, this is an adaptation of a comic book. So, I mean, I agree with everything that you said. This would not be the entry point to for kids to get into the movies, I thought.
The last chapter of 22 movies. Yeah, you're right. This is not the right place to get in on this, but Iron Man certainly would be.
Let's clarify a little bit. This is not Saving Private Ryan with his blood and guts being thrown everywhere, but there is lots of violence mm-hmm. here. And, you know, it's Disney violence in the sense that there's not blood, but, you know, there are people dying all around you.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is.
I think explaining the opening scene would be really difficult for a five-year-old. What happens to the kids? Where did the wife go? I mean, and then you're going to spend, I hate to say it, the whole movie is going to be spent with, a child, I think, being traumatized. That's where I would go from it. I think after that, sure, maybe it's okay. But, I mean, you start that off with, like, oh, hey, where did his kids go? And then why is he killing everybody?
The abandonment issues.
If a five-year-old is able to watch all of the movies and understand it, then he can go see Endgame, and I'm fine with that.
do you want to give him a test? Here, you have to pass this test, kid.
Speaking of being worthy, let's talk about Captain America being worthy enough to finally be able to lift Mjolnir, Thor's hammer.
That was our loudest scream.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And did you catch the line, if your theater was screaming, did you catch the line that right after he held aloft Mjolnir, I knew it.
I knew it.
Yeah. Nope, we missed that.
No, Thor like yells it out, and it was that, you know, him throwing the hammer and calling it back, that got a decent cheer, but as soon as Thor yelled, I knew it, my entire theater, like, yeah, there were a couple guys sitting next to me, and a couple girls sitting next to me that were like, what the hell just happened? I don't understand. I'm going absolutely crazy because my buddies and I had been talking about it the entire time, you know, from the moment that he budged it, you know, you knew that he wasn't worthy, and it's because he wasn't fighting for a cause. He was fighting mainly for himself when he was trying to get the hammer to move. But this one, he was not only fighting for himself, but he was fighting for his friends, his family. He was fighting for the universe. And, you know, that was the just cause that allowed him to move it. And I thought it was amazing how, you know, not only was he swinging the hammer to, you know, hit Thanos, but he was using his shield to bounce it off. He was bouncing the shield off the hammer itself. The only thing that confused me was him calling down the lightning.
Yeah.
That confused me. Because that's not the power of Mjolnir. That's Thor.
Okay, I'll agree with that.
If you go back to Ragnarok, where Thor has this joyous moment where the Hulk comes out to fight him. He's like, I know him! You know, this is very consistent with Helmsworth and how Thor is written for these movies.
How he has become written for these movies. Let's not forget, the first two movies, Thor is a very different character than he is today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's put on a few pounds, Dave.
Yeah. Well, it's Shakespeare in the Park at the beginning, isn't it? It's just...
Does no mother know you're wearing her drapes?
Yeah, that was another great line.
So that brings us to Loki, right?
Oh my god, don't even get me started.
Okay, Loki, my baby!
Let's get started on Loki. So Loki shows up again, of course. He's not as dead as we expected him to be again. And he gets his hands on the Tesseract again, right?
Well, no, he's still dead because that was 2012.
He's dead. That's going back into the time.
Okay, so he's kind of dead, but Loki's never really dead, is he?
I don't know. We'll find out
with the TV.
I was really hoping for the theory that that the reason, you know, Banner couldn't Hulk out was because he was Loki. And there were a lot of, like, things that pointed to it. And, you know, I was really hoping that Planet Hulk was going to come into this, and there was going to be She-Hulk, and there was going to be the Red Hulk and all of this. I was really, really hoping for that. And the fact that, you know, it kind of did point to the fact that Loki is dead, because the only people that couldn't come back were the people who actually died by, you know, true means of death, like Black Widow, Gamora, Loki. You know, they can't come back. So if he's not dead, great. If he is dead, to me, that's even better. I love Loki, don't get me wrong, but it would make a huge continuity error in the films.
Rachel?
I wanted them to do that fan theory that got confirmed to be true, which is what I'm hoping the TV show is, because the directors have confirmed that Loki was under mind control for the first Avengers. Mm.
So you still have high expectations for the Loki TV show.
Yes. So high expectations for this
one. It's starring Hank Williams Jr., isn't it? Hank Williams, isn't it?
Hank Williams. I don't get the joke, Chip. Tell me why. Why would Hank Williams? Oh, why am I asking? Why would Hank Williams play Loki, Chip?
Didn't Hillsworth play Hank Williams in a movie?
Oh, jeez. Okay.
So, viewership just dropped.
It's the Christmas, the country singer, Steve.
Yes.
That's what I think's happening.
All right. So, where are we headed with the MCU? What is going to happen with this story? This story has ended. There's no in credit or after credit scene at the end of this. Where do we head from here?
There is something at the end credits, though.
What is that, Rachel?
A bell or something? I don't know.
There's two theories, but one's the major confirmed one. Mm-hmm. It is Tony in the cave making the first Iron Man suit.
Mm-hmm. And
when you're hearing the digging,
and what would that indicate, Rachel?
Started with Iron Man, ended with Iron Man.
Okay, but what about Morgan Stark, Rachel? Do you think Morgan Stark has the brains to do that again?
Oh no, I totally think she did. I totally could imagine Tony already made her a suit, but I just like to think it's full circle with Tony.
Well, what about Harley Keener too? You see him at the end at the funeral, standing there, a much older version.
Yeah. How about that?
I Google who that was. Yeah.
That was crazy.
No, not the Swingers guy. The lone kid that's standing at the funeral, not by any of the other families.
Oh, yeah.
He's the kid actor from the Iron Man series that they brought back to stand there at the funeral. That is significant in some way.
Yeah, he's the one that helps Tony with his PTSD in Iron Man 3.
And you know, we have to remember, we also had Captain Marvel before this, and I think that they've already, and we had Black Panther before, they could have already started planting seeds for next phase in those movies, you know, knowing that, you know, this one ends, it's kind of a bookend, but the seeds have been planted in those other movies going forward.
Well, there are.
Like I said, we got the Skrulls, we've got, Wakanda's got their own stuff going on, and we could, you know, the story continues to march on.
Oh, yeah.
It's just going to be, it looks like Sam Wilson's going to be the new Captain America.
Correct. We have a confirmation of that in this movie, but there's lots of already announced sequels that are coming out, right?
Yep. Yeah. Doctor Strange 2 is coming, and that's going to be Mordor with his Sorcerer Revenge. Okay. My assumption, based on the end credit scene from the first Doctor Strange, when he says, I figured it out, there's too many sorcerers, and so being that hard-headed character he is. So that's definitely confirmed.
Uh-huh.
Probably 2020, 2021.
And what? And there's a Black Panther 2 already being
filmed. Yep, Black Panther 2.
That has been announced.
Spider-Man Far From Home is in 2 months or whatever.
Right.
Guardians 3 has already been announced, and they did get back their director for that one.
James Gunn is back. The Eternals has been announced. Not an official date, but they're going to do the Eternals at some point.
Black Widow got announced.
Which is very strange, because Black
Widow... It's a prequel.
was listed as somebody who is definitely dead. You think it's a prequel?
They confirmed it's a prequel.
Oh, okay.
It's even, but even if it's a prequel, it's kind of an odd one knowing that she died in Endgame, right? So logic would say she's going to be introduced at some point.
But you also can recognize that Black Widow is a well, certainly a character. It's also a title given to the Russian spies. So it could be they could set up another person to be the Black Widow.
That's similar to like Valkyrie.
And Winter Soldier as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and then we've got the TV shows. We've already talked about the Loki TV show. What else is coming from the TV side?
Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Any more Queen Amidala series coming in, Steve?
I wish. I would love to see more Natalie Portman. She was really, it was great that she was there in this movie, but Natalie Portman was really underutilized in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she doesn't like the MCU.
Yeah, she was upset because she got written out, essentially.
Well, yeah, I could see
an ongoing breakup joke.
I was really hoping for more of a Rocket scene when, like, I thought it was hilarious seeing him, like, sneak around and, you know, pop out from behind the bed and everything. I was really hoping for more of a scene between those two.
Yep.
That's on the DVD.
But he got the payoff with the rabbit. The rabbit, rabbit. That was the payoff for him.
Oh, yeah.
He called him Ratchet at one point, too.
Oh, that was great. That was great.
There is a Shang-Chi movie that's confirmed as well, which is be the first Asian American superhero, so that'd be interesting.
Huh.
And if Marvel could have gone back and worked with the Netflix, it may have served them better to have not had the Iron Fist character that basically brought in Shang-Chi as the martial arts character and had him team up with Daredevil and with Power Man or Luke Cage. They may not have gotten the backlash that they were looking, that they ended up receiving.
I get the sense you were uninspired by the character Danny Rand.
Yeah. Let's go with uninspired. Awful. That's a great way to put it.
I couldn't even get into the only Netflix show that I could get into is Daredevil. I mean, Punisher, of course. That's like a completely different
come on.
Ride.
But Jessica
like,
Jones, come on now.
Jessica Jones was fantastic.
I watched it, and I couldn't stand it. I only watched it for the continuity.
Oh, man.
Oh, I love the purple.
David
the
Tennant was a bet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, David Tennant.
David Tennant was one of the best Marvel villains of of these. This stuff was fantastic, but
I loved him. The Purple Man just truly showed how evil a character could be if they had some kind of power, a pheromone that could basically force you to do things you didn't want to do.
That's right.
So I saw in the show notes that WandaVision is confirmed as a show. I noticed there's nothing about Vision in this film, and I know they alluded to a lot in Infinity War that maybe the best parts of Vision don't involve the Mind Stone. So does anybody have any thoughts on how they're going to kind of reintroduce Vision without the Mind Stone?
So this is where I'm really confused because I read an article where they did an interview with Emily Olsen. And she said that they showed her a picture of her and Vision, but it's in the 50s. So she thinks it's set in the 50s, and I'm like, I don't know how they're doing that.
Yeah, that's tough. I don't know how that timeline would work, even with time travel.
But then she's like, it's a short story. It's going to be told in 6 hours.
This is where my knowledge of, God bless, how in the world do I know this junk? All right, so there was a group called the Invaders, and there was a character called the Human Torch, with a sidekick named Tori. That was the original basis for Vision. That was where the character kind of flipped over, if my memory is serving me correctly, which it can be false. So there could be this idea that there was, I don't know, a World War II group that had this Human Torch character that became, that was turned into the Vision that became a 50s movie. Certainly reaching here, but that would be a way that you could timeline it.
Interesting. I look forward to anything that they're going to put down. And yes, Vision was not in this movie. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that character going forward. All right. There is one more character that we really haven't talked about very much, and that is Spider-Man. Spider-Man has a new movie coming out, Far From Home. And in that, they're going to introduce plenty of new villains. Spider-Man, of course, is known for mostly really good villains. What does the future of that franchise do for the future of this franchise?
Oh, and Tom Holland, the walking spoiler, also confirmed there's gonna be a third Spider-Man film after that. So,
well, that's kind of a given at this point. They're doing everything in trilogies.
Does
Marvel Studios still have access to the character? Are they still helping with this character after, I guess, this third Spider-Man movie? They may not have the rights to do so.
I think it's after the second one they lost it.
Okay.
All right.
It's still $1 billion, whichever way you look at it. So
it's true.
I mean,
it is still
it's a lot of money. They're not going to give it up.
That's right.
So we know we're seeing Mysterio, like by Gyllenhaal. But my assumption is we're going to see at least a few more, per your comment, Steve, because there's a ton of villains in that Spider-Man universe.
It's the best part of the Spider-Man universe, in my opinion, is the villains and how diverse those villains could be in potentially the Marvel universe, the larger scale with the Avengers or whomever.
Isn't Doc Ock mentioned in the preview of this one or not?
I honestly don't
Isn't
know.
There a
don't
Doc Ock David?
I don't.
I thought there was an allusion to it. No, maybe I'm wrong. I maybe I'm just thinking about that because. I think that's one of the best villains, and they need to explore that, even though Alfred Molina did a great job before. I mean, I think they could revisit that, especially with the destruction suit or whatever that suit he had.
Bringing Beetlejuice back to play the Vulture was pretty nice.
Beetlejuice. I think I read that's something that they might be bringing him back.
The guy from
Give me the actor's name.
Michael
Keaton.
Thank you.
Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice is who you come up with, Chip? Yeah. Not Batman. Beetlejuice.
The actor from White Noise.
The guy from Too Close to Comfort. Whatever that show was. Like. Oh my God.
The actor from Mr. Mom. He's going to be coming back.
Who is that tall guy from Bosom Buddies?
Right? Multiplicity? Everybody. That guy.
Yes, Michael Keaton did a great job in the last Spider-Man movie. I really look forward to his acting chops coming back.
Did anyone notice the timeline mess up in the last Spider-Man?
No, what?
So, they have confirmed that each, like, after Avengers Ultron, each year that the movie comes out is the year it's supposed to be set. So then Homecoming should be set in 2016. But Tom Holland messed up and said that kid in Avengers that has the Iron Man thing is supposed to be him. Which would have made him have to... Which they then... At the beginning of Homecoming, they made Avengers 2012, and then they did an 8-year-later jump. So according to the movie, it's set in 2020. But it's supposed to be set in 2016. So when the book came out, they had to retcon it and say, no, it is supposed to be 2016.
Okay.
Which also makes Civil War a Christmas movie. Because Black Panther is a month after Civil War. And Black Panther is 2017.
Okay. This is getting too complicated for me. This MCU is getting too complicated at this point.
Wait, where does Bruce Willis fit into this? Die Hard.
This timeline's done, so now at this point it's pretty easy to restart it.
There you go.
That's what comic books have done for decades, right? Wipe timelines and restart.
That's it. Yeah.
What X-Men did how many times?
It's about telling good stories.
That's what, right.
Is Tony Stark going to wake up in a shower and forget about the last year?
We were wondering if he's going to show up at the end.
Is that obscure enough for you, Chip? I'm just asking. Just checking.
That's going to work. That's going to work. That's how they're going to bring the X-Men in. It's going to be like a big wake up. They're like, oh, you know, who knows? Maybe Dark Phoenix destroys everything just to... be rebirthed in the Marvel Universe.
I have no faith in that Dark Phoenix movie. I have no faith that that's going to be any good. I'm way more excited about rolling into Fantastic Four than the X-Men.
Well, they already said they're going to wait on Fantastic Four.
I'm so excited for this Dark Phoenix movie. Like, X-Men has always been one of my favorite series growing up, so I'm living for this. That's the only trailer I've seen was at Endgame. And
don't
just
look into the trailers.
Like, oh, I'm so excited.
Okay. So
don't read any articles.
Love her.
The only thing that they bring back is more Kevin Bacon.
Okay. He's one of the Avengers now.
Oh my god.
Mantis wanted to know. And Thor said maybe.
So Kevin Bacon is now on the docket. All right. Is there anything else that we need to talk about with this movie before we close out this conversation?
Will there be dancing with Kevin Bacon in the movie? You never know. You never know.
Is John Lithgow going to be the villain in the Kevin Bacon movie?
How are they doing the Hawkeye TV show?
Crossover with the Planet of the Apes with John Lithgow in it. Sure.
Rachel, it's a good question. I have no clue.
Yeah.
I think the children are going to have something to do with it. It'll be a young person show.
Okay, I buy that.
See, I was really with this movie. I was really hoping for the Young Avengers, like that old animated movie from I think it was like 2006, where it shows I think it was Black Widow and Captain America's kid, and just. I was really hoping for like a Young Avengers to pop out with those same children that have been in the comics multiple times, but because they've kind of changed who's who has kids, who doesn't, and they changed the relationships and everything, I'm really disappointed that we're not getting that.
Hmm. Maybe.
So, that brought up something. We haven't talked about the Hulk.
Yeah, tell me about the Hulk, Rachel.
Well, I'm just curious if everyone liked him being like split between the two or not.
There's so many different Hulks available, and yes, one of the Hulks is the really smart and still very muscular Hulk. So, say it again, Chip?
Who likes to take selfies?
Who likes to take selfies? Yes, he's the Steve Fodor Hulk.
And he likes to dab.
He does like to dab, that was... No, I personally thought this Hulk was great. There were a couple things that, you know, kind of took away from who the Hulk was, like when they went back in time to the original Avengers in New York, and he just kind of, you know, he smashes and he goes, grr, and he throws the bike and he goes, rah. Like,
seems kind of gratuitous.
Yeah, it was funny, but, you know, I was really hoping for at least one scene for him to just Hulk out, because they had the toy where it kind of spoiled him popping out of the Hulk Buster and everything. That never happened. As huge as he was, he got back into the Hulkbuster perfectly fine, you know, like, and the Hulkbuster was made way before Tony actually had a suit that would wrap around the body, which is why we were able to see the, you know, the gauntlet that he had made wrap around the Hulk's arm and then go right onto Tony's arm. So that was a little continuity error for me, is that the Hulkbuster was made way before as a precaution in case, you know, the Hulk ever raged out, and now that he's able to just pop right into it, it kind of doesn't make sense.
To be fair, I think he played one of the biggest roles in the film, donning the gauntlet to bring everyone back in the first place. So I think they just made a creative decision to give him a higher purpose because of his gamma radiation.
Oh yeah,
background.
I forgot about the Hulk for part of the movie.
But that goes back to the first Avengers movie where he you know, when they're looking at the spear and saying there's all the gamma radiation, that just kind of full circled that, I think, in the end.
We said at the start, they did a really good job with story arcs. Even Hulk seeing old Hulk smashing things, he was like, that used to be me. Interesting, right?
Yeah.
They did a really good job to swing everything back around to where we started, and which is, if anyone knows, it's Kevin Feige, 22 films later. It's masterful what they did. Yeah.
Did anyone hope that when they split Bruce Banner, it was going to become two different people?
Yes. That's exactly what I thought was going to happen. And, you know, I thought that for that second when basically, you know, his spirit gets taken out, that the Hulk was just going to become his own person and Banner was just going to be stuck. And they were going to have to figure that out. Like, to me, that would have been a nice little twist to that story.
Well, then they could have put Hulk in the Hulk, or Bruce in the Hulkbuster, and we would have been fine.
In what body, though? Because he got taken out spiritually.
Well, no, I was saying it became two bodies for some reason. Okay. It just, like, got split.
They were truly two separate spirits. Okay. They were two truly separate Jekyll and Hyde, two different people.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like the film Evolution, where the large creature separates into two equal creatures. Mm-hmm. I was trying to go with the Chip, like, random reference here. You know, Chip, you're supposed to laugh.
Is there anything else? Anything else that
we
missed?
I thought you were going to go with a Venom kind of thing, and I was going to get a little cringy, but that's
yeah,
okay.
That would have been. Yeah, I agree. That would not have worked out so well.
I think one thing that, you know, we kind of glanced over with all the emotional stuff was when Cap and Black Widow and Ant-Man visit Stark at his home, and, you know, they're talking about time travel and everything, and he's like, it's not possible. He looks at the picture of him and Parker, and, you know, it's just, to him, he's like, I could bring everyone back. I know what to do. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, he doesn't care. He doesn't want to do anything. Immediately solves it, like, that night.
You know,
him and his daughter have the whole conversation about, you know, how one word's mommy's word and she can't say that, which I thought was adorable.
Mm-hmm.
But then going back, like, farther into the movie towards the end when, you know, Peter's talking to him about how one second they're gone, the next second they're there, and, you know, all these orange circles happen. I thought it was amazing how Robert Downey Jr. played that, like, loving father figure for Peter, where he just goes right up to him.
So many glitter circles.
Oh, yeah. All the glitter circles. But I thought it was great how he just went up and, you know, he basically just held him for a good, I don't know, 30 seconds and just, you know, showed that he actually cared about this kid, because, you know, he talked about losing him and how he, if anything ever happened to the kid, it was his fault. And that ran full circle, too.
Mm-hmm.
That was the beginning of the crying fest.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that the first thing he says to Captain America? I lost the kid. Doesn't say anything else. The first thing he says, I lost the kid.
Yeah.
So, again, that was, you know, you were saying crying. It was like, oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
How can you get past that one? So.
And then he gets all angry and yells, we're the Avengers, not the pre-Avengers.
Pre-Avengers.
That, like, you know, as comical as that line is, that's like, one to me, that was one of the most real lines of the film. Yeah. Where he's just so angry because, you know, he had told people this was going to happen. He told them about the dream, you know, way after that it actually, you know, happened. And to me, they just glanced over that. Like, he admits that he had a dream where he knew this was going to happen. He just thought, oh, it's, you know, it's fake. It's not going to actually happen. But he's like, we could have prevented this, or we could have tried to stop this. I had a plan. You said no. If we die, we die together. If we lose together type deal.
That I think that plays back to his arrogance and how he developed as a person. Because in the beginning, he's just this arrogant guy who knows he's probably the smartest person on the planet. He can do anything, and that there is that vulnerability, and that how at the end he came to grips with that character. I think that was the payoff with Tony Stark, was he actually figured out that he was a human being and the smartest person on the planet, and how can those coexist instead of just being, you know, and that happened. Definitely with Peter, but then also, you know, with having having Morgan and all that stuff at the end of Endgame. So that was his payoff, but I think that was maybe the biggest overarching theme of all of those movies.
Oh, yeah. I was just really hoping that something was going to happen with the reactor when he took it off and said it, when you beat Thanos and he hands it off to Cap. I was really hoping something was going to happen with that.
I don't know why, but I was half expecting that was how they got him out of the movie. Like, took it out, dead. No more Tony Stark. And I was like, don't do this.
And then
5 years later, and yeah, gave everybody time to figure out their life.
Went back and saw the first Avengers literally last night. And I was just watching it. And I was amazed, having not seen it that much recently, you know,
kind of glitch they pulled to Endgame. You know, they had the obvious stuff, but even like little stuff was pretty out there. I was like, oh my gosh, they just addressed this. They just addressed this. They just addressed that. And I thought it was pretty cool.
But the grand part of that is they know fans are going to be taking apart these movies, and they're like, we're not going to leave anything to chance.
Oh, yeah.
Other piece, in Infinity War, they had all the trouble in the world taking on Thanos' henchmen, and in that final battle, it was like crushing roaches. Legitimately, Ant-Man just stepped on the big guy. Ebony Maw really didn't do anything. I was surprised they didn't show him doing more. And then the one got stabbed in the stomach by a female character. I forget who it was, but it like was too easy almost. Mm-hmm. So that was quite the juxtaposition from Infinity War, or when they were struggling mightily with them. So.
Can we talk about Scarlet Witch?
Oh my god.
Sure.
She by far stole the show, in my opinion. Like, that a lot of people, you know, based on what comic and what universe you read, Thanos is like Superman and Darkseid. All of them have a weakness to magic depending on what universe you read. And it kind of showed in this. Even with him using his blade and everything, she just rips the armor off and just, in my opinion, if they would have played it right, she could have killed him right there before he even got the gauntlet. And that's what I thought was going to happen.
But yeah, I don't think the armor,
which was pretty amazing. Go ahead, Chris.
But don't she and Captain Marvel get their powers from the same source? So I thought it was going to be the two of them together were going to be the ones that take Thanos down. That was what I predicted, but I didn't know how it was going to work because I'm not a comic book guy, so I know nothing other than what I just saw or somebody throws up on the internet like the Hail Hydra thing. And that's what I thought was going to happen. And it kind of proved that they were both very his equal or almost equal, which was kind of cool because they directly used Infinity Stones for their power.
Anything else? Is there any other topic that we need to cover before we wrap this thing up?
No, we can just keep talking forever.
I know. That's why I'm trying to wrap it up.
I could tell Steve was ready like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, I was done.
But he's like, Rachel, tell me about it. Tell me about the Hulk.
Yeah, I was done about 20 minutes ago. So let's wrap this thing up. It's been a great ride. 11 years, 22 movies. And do you think that the Avengers Endgame is a suitable last chapter? Let's go alphabetical. Rachel, is this a good ending to this story?
Yeah, because they were doing the test screenings and they're like, it's 3 hours. We don't know what else we can take. And we're like, keep it. And I'm like, they maybe could have taken like 2 minutes out, but they needed everything else.
All right. Adrian, was this a good movie?
Yeah, it was by far, in my opinion, the best Marvel movie to have come out so far. And they, you know, said goodbye to a lot of lovable characters and, you know, gave them the proper send-off that I think they deserved.
Kyle, do you expect to go back to the movie theater and watch this one again?
Yeah, I'll probably catch it in a week or two. I think it's great because it wraps up all the storylines and it opens lots of possibilities for what's coming next. Right, so it's Endgame, but the end is also the beginning.
Chip, have you changed your mind on your C that you gave this movie on Facebook?
No. I think it's a C. I think it's a C.
Chris, what do you think about this movie?
Hold on.
I'm gonna give Chip's evaluation a C. So it was bad. No. I thought it was a great ending. I thought it was a great summation of all the characters. I think they did a great job and I'm looking forward to what else they're gonna do.
Awesome. I really enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed the whole ride, the whole 11 years, 22 movies that came to fruition at this story. I think it's a good, perfect ending for Tony Stark, and I look forward to what the MCU is going to give us as the next phase opens up on this one. As we go forward, where can our listeners find more from each of you? Let's start again. Let's go alphabetical. Rachel, where can our listeners find more about Rachel?
On Instagram at lazilybusy.
Lazilybusy on Instagram. Adrian, where can we find more Adrian?
I'm on Twitch. It's cruising underscore on underscore you. All words.
Kyle, our movie expert, where can we find all of your writing?
You can find me on my blogspot, kyleahickman.blogspot.com, or on my Twitter, where I tweet all things movies, film, sports, and life.
Chip, where can we find more about you? Chip's not listening anymore. Chip can be found mostly at Too Much Scrolling, TooMuchScrolling.com, and our Twitter account, and our Instagram, and our Facebook. And you can go to our email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com, if you have more questions. Chris Mao, what is up in Chris's world? Where can we find you most days?
Blue Box Cafe, on the web, on Twitter, and all that stuff. Also at GeeksCon, GeeksCon.com. That's where you can find my stuff and what's happening with us.
The Blue Box Cafe in Elgin, the Doctor Who based cafe that you own and operate, yeah. And you are apparently you've been kidnapped and you're sitting in the back of today.
Yeah, they kidnapped me because you know I don't like to work on Saturdays, but that's okay.
I think the one kidnapped also, is Chip.
Also,
based on what I'm saying,
that's right. Chip is kidnapped.
Yeah, home of Geek Fest. That's why I keep saying.
And Geek Pride Day, which is coming up on May 25th. Don't forget about Geek Pride Day. Our inaugural Geek Pride Day is happening at the Blue Box Cafe on May 25th. I hope everybody can come out. Go to geekprideday.net to find all of the information. Stacey Shaw reviews movies in England, and she can be found on Twitter, Films with Stacey. Stacey spelled with an E-Y at the end because she's British. Or you can go to her Facebook, Films with Stacey. To find out more about what she gives us. Thank you all for joining us. I really appreciate all of your time and all of your love of this movie. Rachel, last words.
I am Iron Man.
Adrian.
I am Groot.
Kyle.
On your left, Cap.
Chip.
Avengers Assemble.
Chris.
Part of the journey is.
Say it again. It broke up.
I said part of the journey is the end.
And I am Steve Fodor. I am a host of a podcast called Too Much Scrolling. Go to TooMuchScrolling.com. And all I have to say is somebody wet my pants.